This is a podcast from The Red House, the former home of Benjamin Britten and Peter Piers. I'm Lucy Walker. Join me, colleagues and other guests for a monthly chat about all things Britten and Piers, plus music, culture, heritage in general, and anything else that might come up. Welcome to the From the Red House podcast. We're well into season three now, and I am really thrilled to be talking to Hannah Fiddy from Alternative Classical, which is a brilliant organisation that aims to encourage people, as many people as possible, to get into classical music. Welcome, Hannah.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Great to talk to you. Can we just launch straight in and tell us about what Alternative Classical is and how did it start?
Yeah, so alternative classical is a whole range of different things. It's all about exploring the many different ways that we can present classical music, both digitally and in person. So I suppose the first step was creating an events guide. I was going to so many brilliant concerts that were hosted outside of the concert hall, in pubs and warehouses and outdoors and just lots of different venues, and presented in all kinds of ways. And I just really wanted to spread the word about these, because when I was talking to my friends who didn't work in the industry, they were saying, how on earth do you find out about these amazing events? And I thought, oh, they're actually, how do you find out about these things? And so I thought, right, okay, someone needs to bring all this together. Because I just really thought that these events could open up classical music to a new audience, mainly people in their 20s and 30s who are perhaps culturally engaged and might go to an art exhibition or a museum or a gig, but weren't necessarily specifically interested in classical music. So it started as an events guide, and from there it's just grown, really, and we've now got just so many, we've got so much content on the website. We've become an agency. We've created something called Concert Roulette, which I think we're going to go on to talk to later on. We've got a recent project called Humans of Classical Music. So yes, there's all kinds of things. So where should we begin?
I think just one thing you said that really struck me, perhaps, and that might lead into talking further about some elements of this, is that you have friends who are in their 20s and 30s who go to art galleries, who go to gigs, go to theatre, go to cinema, presumably. But what is it, do you think, that historically has put them off going to classical concerts?
I think there's something about... Well, I suppose it's been talked about a lot, this idea that people get quite intimidated by classical music, that you might not know how to act or how to dress, and that perhaps you might not feel so welcome in these spaces. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something about, say, going to an art gallery, that we now feel it's fine to just turn up in your jeans and walk around at your own pace and see what you like and talk about it in a way that's really natural, I suppose. You're really happy to go and look at a piece of art and say, oh, I love this one because of the colours, and I really don't like the textures of that, and I'm really drawn to this one. I don't really know why, but I just really like this one in particular. And we haven't quite gone through that process, I feel, for classical music yet. And that's actually the basis for Humans of Classical Music, which is a series I created during lockdown. It was my when everyone else was baking sourdough, I was contacting lots of people and asking them to talk for around 1 minute about their favourite piece of classical music and not use any jargon, just talk about it in a really natural way. And now I'm releasing those videos every Thursday with a link to go and listen to the piece. And I thought it would just really help to hear all kinds of people just talking about, you know, I really love this Mozart piece because it makes me just feel really happy and it makes me want to dance, and saying that rather than saying, well, I really like that it's in F sharp minor and it's, you know, all, which is all really interesting as well. But I just thought it would help to be a bit more casual about it.
Yeah. So it's it sometimes seems that it's what's perceived to be the language around classical music that can be off-putting, or the structures around it, or the kind of what you have to be, feel, dress like, know about before you can even walk through the door of a venue.
Yeah. I think there's something about the language of it. I hear lots of people saying, oh, well, I don't know how to pronounce the name of that piece or the composer. Or they just may not think to where to, you know, how do I even find those tickets, and am I going to be able to socialise at the same time? Because I think some of the events that I've worked on, you can very much turn up, see your friends, get to hear some culture, but I think there's a sense that in a concert hall you're very much there, the focus is entirely on the music, and you may be shushed. And this is not at all the case against concert halls. I feel like it's important to state that I'm not at all arguing against that. I think it's just that there can be a multitude of ways that we can present classical music, and it doesn't all have to be in that one format.
Is venue important? Sorry, I'll start that question again. Actually, now I'm it was going to become too complicated a question. I was wondering what have you found to be the most successful way of attracting people to classical music? Is it venue? Is it repertoire? Is it presentation? Is it how the performer presents himself? Is it what do you find is the kind of way in, or are there multiple ways in?
I think definitely multiple ways, and also I think the jury's still out. I think we're still exploring all kinds of things. I still feel really conscious that even though I'm now, you know, we've now got thousands of followers, and that's growing every day, which is amazing, but I still feel really that's probably mainly reaching people who already know about classical music. So I think all of us have still got a really long way, but we can just keep trying. I just love this idea of experimenting and just throwing paint at the wall and seeing what sticks. And I suppose for, you know, lots of reasons in classical music, we really feel like we have to sell this concert as being this is going to change your life, and you know, this is the perfect finished product, and that's partly through the classical music training that we've all been through, which is trying to reach these heights of perfectionism, I suppose, and I just love this idea of breaking that down and just saying, well, why not, let's just try a different venue, let's try presenting it in a mad way with, I don't know, lighting and cocktails and maybe cross arts. You know, there could be a collaboration with dance or visual art, or there's so many different things that we can try. So I suppose I'm just here to get excited about the ways that we can present it and see what happens. I don't necessarily know the outcome, but I just know that I particularly feel really inspired by these events, so I trust that other people will as well.
For sure, yeah. And it's it sounds like it needs that. Well, I know it does. I mean, you know, I think the organisation, I work for an arts organisation, and audience development is a very important issue, and you're always trying to encourage people to come, because you know lots of my colleagues think this is such good stuff, why don't people, you know, want to come to it, and you're always trying to break that down and make it not seem like either a chore or a threat or a, you know, just something that's not for everybody. How did you get into classical music yourself? Was it at school or university, or how did it happen?
So I started playing the recorder, as everyone does, age 7. And I suppose I really took to that and ended up getting recorder lessons. My dad was actually my primary headmaster. So that was interesting growing up. And he had a bit of a background in music. He played various instruments, so I suppose it was... He was very keen to bring lots of arts education into the school. So he employed a violin teacher, so I also got violin lessons. A few years later, I started learning the piano and I joined my local church choir. So I suppose from about the age of 7, classical music has been my life. And then I went to Cambridge University to study music. From there, I actually didn't work in music straight away. I really wanted to, but I found it a real barrier that you had to get. You often have to do a 6-month unpaid internship. Mm. I'm not from London. I didn't have the kind of support available to do that. So I actually worked in publishing for a few years. Looking back, I'm really happy that I did that, because I think it's given me a bit more of an outside view into classical music, having not entirely worked in that. So after a few years of working in publishing, and learning, you know, all about marketing. And I was always the person in various publishers that was saying, come on, we need to get on social media, we need to have a blog. I was very content first. And I think back then, I mean, it seems strange to talk about it now, but, you know, these companies weren't on social media, and it wasn't the done thing to have a blog. And I was saying, I'm sure that this is the way that things are going. So I then got to HarperCollins publisher, and I went on a training course, and I realized, oh, the thing that I actually really care about is music and connecting with new audiences. And I suppose I'd known that all along, but, you know, it gets buried along the way. And so I just had that epiphany and went away and found a job at Spitalfields Music as their marketing manager. And I just thought it sounded absolutely perfect. So I was really lucky to get that job. And at that point, I transferred into music. And then fast forward a few years later, and I decided to go freelance. And at that point, I set up Alternative Classical.
Wow. So it's come from a kind of, so you're sort of steeped in music from a really early age. It like got you quite young. And then it, I guess, you know, it just sticks, doesn't it? I mean, it's like learning a language when you're 8 is so much easier to take in than when you're 28.
Absolutely, but, yeah. I suppose I feel really strongly about that, that a lot of us in the industry have been so lucky to have been steeped in it from such a young age. Yeah. And actually, there are so many people that haven't. So for them coming to it, it's a very different experience. So perhaps we do need to think about how we talk about it and how we relate it to people without it being patronizing. But yeah, it's funny because I was doing a clear out at my mum's house recently, and I discovered that when I was, I don't know, 12 or something, I'd written a guide to a kind of accessible guide to classical music as a child. So it's obviously something that's been in my brain for a really long time. So it's really, and I don't know if that's because, well, I suppose a lot of people had this experience that I was surrounded by people that didn't necessarily play any instruments. And I went to a state school, and it had a really good music department, but it's not at all like everyone played an instrument. So I suppose I was always surrounded by people who didn't have as much access that as I did. So I felt the need to share it and just popularise it, I suppose.
That's amazing at 12.
I know. So if I could, if I could tell my 12-year-old self that I've made that my career. Very strange.
But that is interesting that I also went to a state school that had a really strong music department, and I think it's becoming increasingly rare, I think, for that to be the case. And I think I did wonder what, if part of your impetus was just observing that, you know, audiences traditionally are older, and I don't know whether that's because the current older generation, well, I say older, they're sort of from my age and upwards, had a stronger music education at school, or classical music tends to be something that people come to later on if they haven't earlier. But obviously you and I are sort of proving that we, you know, we got into it from a really early age, so that can be possible and often is. But I'm wondering, and I guess you are, where this next generation of audiences is coming from.
Yeah, I find it really concerning. And if I didn't have that amazing music department at my secondary school, and if I didn't have my parents paying for music lessons from a really young age, I wouldn't be here doing this now. So I do find that really scary. And I suppose I'm trying to do my part in trying to make it as exciting as possible and as relevant. So a lot of the things that I do are about presenting classical music in different ways online, and I do a lot of social media work, because I think that's an area that we're also quite far behind in classical music. And I think there is a bit of a narrative within parts of the industry that we shouldn't be on social media. And that it's seen as almost, artists in particular should keep themselves almost in their ivory tower and have a bit of a layer of mystique about them. And I think there are lots of good examples now of musicians who are gaining loads of followers online. And they're just trying to show a little bit more behind the scenes as to what does it mean to be a musician, and what does that life look like? I think another part to all of this is that I find it really concerning that we're also narrowing music education and access to probably more likely pupils at private schools, and that it's becoming possibly less inclusive rather than more. And I'm really trying to open that out and represent all kinds of people, because I really don't think it would be in any way beneficial to the sector for that to be the case.
Absolutely. It's going in the wrong direction, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a lot of organisations doing a lot of brilliant work in this area, but it has to be supported by music education.
Definitely.
Otherwise, it just becomes really, really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. This comes up time and time again on the podcast conversations I have, and it's, you know, you always try and, can we solve it in this next half hour? but I think, yeah, there's the only way to do it is to do what you're doing, is to find ways of engaging, experiment, see what sticks, you know, but also participate, you know, find ways of saying that you don't have to be some kind of different species of person.
I think it's really important for us all to remember that different experiences attract different audiences, and what you may enjoy may not be what someone else enjoys. So we need all kinds of people and different gatekeepers and different voices within the industry who are talking about different experiences, and one isn't better than the other, or you know, there's no hierarchy in this. I think I come across that time and time again, that it's almost I get a lot of people asking me, oh, is the hope that you'll kind of lure someone in to one of your performances, and then from that they will kind of be converted to, you know, go and see the Ring Cycle at the Royal Opera House, and that's brilliant if they want to do that, but I don't really see it as an either or situation. I think it's just remembering that we just need lots of different voices and people championing different ways of presenting it.
Definitely. And also, you know, even people who have lots of experience with classical music, they don't like everything. I know people who would rather, well, just would never go to a Ring Cycle performance because, you know, because Wagner, for whatever reason.
Oh, and, totally.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, others, that's their idea of absolute heaven. Let us play Concert Roulette. tell us about
Great.
How Concert Roulette started and how you got this, how you got all the stuff together to make it work.
So Concert Roulette was my lockdown project from lockdown one. It came out of just a, let's say, tipsy conversation with my partner. And we were talking about Chat Roulette, which is, I don't know if you remember this, but it's from, I don't know, the noughties. Where you can chat to a random person around the world, and then you can just keep swiping until you find someone else that you want to talk to.
I've never heard this.
Okay, it's almost like an early dating app, but it's not for dating, it's just for chatting. For some reason, our conversation went to Chat Roulette, and then I said, how would we mix Chat Roulette and classical music? And I said, right, let's do Concert Roulette. And it was at that point that there were all kinds of digital performances springing up. I was thinking about also what's the call to action for arts organisations, because I've spent my life being a marketing person and trying to get bums on seats. And I thought, well, we no longer have that call to action. So what do we need to do? Streaming is going to be the next important thing. So we made Concert Roulette, which brings together, it's now about 400 YouTube videos, and you just press play and you just land somewhere in a concert hall or in a non-concert hall, different kind of venue, and I've selected the exact second before the music starts, and you can choose to watch the concert if you like the piece of music, or you can just press another and then you just go somewhere else in the world and find a different piece of music. So part of the idea is that I think a lot of us had decision paralysis at that point, and there just seemed to be so many options. And it's when you go on Netflix and you think, oh, I just can't think what to watch. There's just too many things. And then you end up watching nothing. And that was happening to me with classical music, that people were inviting me to so many live streams and you know, all the other brilliant activity from that time. And I just ended up not doing very much of it. So I thought, right, let's just take away that entire thing. I've chosen for you. And it's also random. So you just see what you end up with. And if you don't like it, that's fine. You can move on. We don't all have to like all, as you said, we don't all have to like all kinds of classical music. And I would love to do a project that talks about that, actually, that we feel okay to say, well, this isn't really my cup of tea, but I really do like this, because I worry that people tend to put classical music all in one box, and then if they don't like one piece, they think, oh well, I don't like the entire genre, you wouldn't go to the cinema, watch a bad film, and then think, oh well, I guess the cinema is just not for me. But for some reason we do that with classical music a bit. So Concert Roulette, and it just became so popular. I just, for a project that I made essentially in my bedroom in lockdown one, it's now been played in, I think it's about 120 countries, and by thousands of people, and there's still people on it every day now. So it's really caught some people's attention, which is amazing.
I think it's great. I mean, I absolutely love a randomised thing. I've just got a bit of a taste for it. So it would absolutely appeal to me. And I also love that, interestingly, you've got your filters, as I'm on the webpage now, and you can think, actually, only show me, so you can just choose, I only want 20th century music, or I only want Baroque music, or whatever. So you can actually turn it off, or you can just dive in and have anything. And I think that's great. So I'm actually gonna played it the other day, and I had some Vivaldi, some Miklos Rocha, some Steve Reich, some Hildegard von Bingen, and then it's a very interesting contemporary piece by Larry Goves, and some Stravinsky. It was great. It was an absolute real taster of all sorts of things, some of which I knew and some of which I didn't. Even for people who know a reasonable amount about classical music, it's brilliant, because it's always going to show you something you've never heard before.
I think that was another important part of it, that I thought that if someone wanted to explore classical music, they might begin by going to Spotify and typing in classical music. But I thought the kind of pieces that you're going to come across are going to be all the same, you know, Beethoven 5, the Hallelujah Chorus, fireworks music, Four Seasons. And that music is included in Concert Roulette, but I thought, let's have some different options. And as you say, I think even for people who know a lot about classical music, there's probably some surprises in there.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just going to click it now, so we might get a bit of background noise just to see what comes up. Oh, here we go. So we've got Louis Andriessen, who's a Dutch composer who's only recently died, I believe, a piece called Hocatus, which looks like a chamber piece for traditional instruments, but also I can see an electric guitar. And he's a really interesting voice, I would say. That's a great one. And then the next one is Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite. So there you go.
Concert in a nutshell. Mishmash.
No, I love that. I love it. And I think there's something about the kind of shuffle playlist aesthetic around it as well, that people are much more up for that. It's a really brilliant way of finding out about music. And there's another exciting development along those lines. Do you want to just tell us about that?
There is. So based on the success of that, I decided to create Opera Roulette, which is probably launching this week, depending on when you're listening. This week or last week. So you could be one of the first to play. So we're in the process of finding opera scenes. Again, some of them will be in grand opera houses around the world. Some of them will be flash mobs in supermarkets or Covent Garden. And we're trying to find a real mix of composers. Everything I do, I include a lot of female composers as well, because that's really important to our mission, and diverse composers. And also we're really trying to represent opera from, as you say, all the way from Monteverdi up to something that might have been premiered last month. So who knows what you're going to come across.
Fantastic.
But let's see if how Opera Roulette does, and if that is as popular as Concert Roulette has been.
Oh, I should think so. And it so do you consciously choose the videos that you that go into this sort of database, or do you approach people and ask them to submit something? How does that work?
Both. So for Concert Roulette, I started out and I just found all videos myself, and then I created a form. So if anyone would like to submit their concert, they're very welcome to do so. And I've now done the same for Opera Roulette. So submissions are now open.
Fantastic. Great. Well, that's going to be super exciting when that comes out, and I'm looking forward to having a go at that too. Because like anybody, I can get very dug into my own preferences. You know, I'm sort of 20th century music person, really, and 21st, and I can be very dismissive of, you know, centuries of classical music that just doesn't seem to quite float my boat. But it's lovely that something might come up and say, oh, okay, no, I can get on board with that, even though it was written in 1740 or whatever.
It's good to be jolted out of our bubbles, isn't it?
Exactly. Do you have a favourite era of music?
Good question. I think I'm really drawn to early music, mm-hmm. And also contemporary. So I think Concert Roulette is slightly skewed. I think there is a lot of contemporary music in there.
That's great.
And there probably is a lot of Bach as well, because he's my favourite composer. Yeah, it's really interesting speaking to people who, because I don't think I listen to a lot of strictly classical music. And it's not that I dislike it, but I think I just don't really go for it as much. But I'm a big choral music fan, so that's probably the thing that I listen to the most.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find that early and contemporary, those two things quite often go together.
They do. It's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have a podcast playlist and like to have a couple of contributions. So I get to put in two, but also you get to put in two. So is there anything that you would particularly like to endorse along the lines of your Humans and Music, Classical Music project that you'd like to share and think that people should listen to?
Oh, this is such a hard question. So the two pieces that I'm listening to at the moment, I've managed to pick a composer that I don't even know how to pronounce his name, so we're off to a good start. So the first piece I've gone with is Ubi Caritas by, I'm going to say it, Ola Yellow.
Okay.
And his surname is spelt G-J-E-I-L-O. So if anyone else knows how to pronounce that, please let me know. But it's a really lovely piece that's been recorded by Voces 8. It's on my mind because I just sang it yesterday. I went singing for the first time in about 2 years yesterday. Very excited about that. And that was one of the pieces that we sang. I've never sung any of his music, but I thought it was a really lovely piece.
Fantastic.
And the other piece that I'd like to recommend is another contemporary piece. So it's Partita for Eight Voices by Caroline Shaw. I'm a big fan of Caroline Shaw, who's an American composer. And I just think I would love to see this live. It's just really different from anything I've listened to. And it's exactly what we were just saying. It's kind of a fusion of early music, but done in a really contemporary way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an exploration of how to use the human voice, and there's kind of the speaking and there's bits of singing. But yeah, I think it's a great piece. Go and check it out.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you so much. Well, yeah, two brand new composer names to me. Which is part of this point. So for me, in the spirit of Classical Roulette, I'm going to, if I can find that Louis Andriessen piece, Hocatus, on Spotify, then I'll put that in. But if not, I'll put another Andriessen piece in, because I think he's really interesting.
Brilliant,
And I've heard some of his stuff live in the Netherlands. It's just always incredibly exciting. So it's lovely to see it staged as well, because that's the other thing. You're not just listening, you're seeing the performance too, which hence you're using YouTube. It's not just audio. And I think that seems to be part of the project as well, is what's it like to watch the performers doing their thing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's also a great example because someone chose that for one of the Humans of Classical Music videos.
Oh, really?
They chose that as their favourite piece. So there's also, you can go onto my site and you can see someone speaking for 1 minute about what they like about that piece.
Oh,
so
fantastic.
That works well.
Great. Oh, well, that's, there you go. It was serendipity. And the other one, I've just played it again, is the Fourier Requiem.
Lovely piece.
Which is lovely. I haven't heard it for a very, very long time. So,
oh, me neither. I'd love to go and sing that.
Yeah, so that's another aspect of this I found is a few old favourites coming through as well that you just almost take for granted and you can go back and appreciate them anew.
Yeah, I suppose we could be a little bit dismissive of pieces that end up being so popular.
Yes.
But actually, there's so many people that are coming to these afresh and... That's a great example. I'd love to go and listen to the Fourier Requiem.
Yeah, it's popular for a reason, I would say.
Popular for a reason, exactly, yeah.
Fantastic, Hannah. So Opera Roulette is coming up soon. What else is on your desk for alternative classical?
So one of the things I'm working on at the moment, so we've got the Humans of Classical Music series, which continues until the end of 2021. And I'm currently making a version of that for kids. So I'm actually, if anyone's listening and you know of a child who is aged between 5 and 11 who loves classical music and would happily talk about their favourite piece for a minute or so, we are looking for people to send in their videos. So the idea for that is to introduce children through the voices and ears of their peers. And just, I'm so intrigued to see how children talk about music, which is probably going to be it's going to be refreshing to hear the language that they use to speak about it.
And what pieces that get them? I mean, what is it that they're drawn to? Because it could be anything, couldn't it? Much less judgmental, presumably, about sound or whether something's considered to be cliched or not. I mean, they won't care when you're 5.
Yeah, I'm so curious to see how that works and if it does work indeed, because I think even when I haven't yet recorded my own video for Humans of Classical Music, but I was even feeling, even though I've kind of produced the project and I don't want people to feel that pressure to appear intelligent and that learned and earnest, but even I felt the pressure that I've got to kind of prove something, and I thought, no, we need to somehow get rid of this, that you're not there to try and it's not about you, it's about the music, and if we can somehow take that ego out of it or that filter, then I think kids could be a great way of doing that.
Definitely. I mean, I find that I don't work directly with children very much myself, but I know I've had colleagues at Britain Peers Arts who very much do, and have found that you can play some quite avant-garde, very contemporary music to children, and they're responding to it in a way just completely instinctively, not and sort of enjoying the discord or the kind of experimental nature of it without bringing any preconceptions to it, that it's just that's kind of terrible noise, I wouldn't ever listen to that.
The ones that we've had so far, a lot of them have come up with a story around it, which has been really interesting. So they'll create a scene where they say, this bit sounds like bunnies hopping across a field, and then when they get there, a helicopter lands, and then they've got this whole narrative around it, which I just think is lovely.
That's great. Amazing. Thank you so much. It's such a terrific initiative, and I really look forward to seeing what you do next. And I'll be keeping an eye on your Opera Roulette and your Humans in Classical Music. It's absolutely brilliant. So thanks so much for talking to me today.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you very much.